Shalom Aleichem. My name is Rabbi Adam Dubin. First, I was asked to make an announcement that last night's shiur was recorded. Unfortunately, due to some technical difficulties, it wasn't immediately available. So if you're interested in receiving it, please contact Jake Wyman, who runs Shiur Enjoyment. You can reach him at 917-626-8306. Again, to receive last night's recording, contact Jake Wyman at 917-626-8306. Tonight, our learning is once again for the Refuah Shleima of Dr. This was Parshas Balak. As we know, just a little background. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he set up obviously that there should be Nevi'im, prophets among the B'nai Yisrael, and so that the, as the Midrash says, so that the Umos HaOlam, the nations of the world, wouldn't complain, he also ended up to create Nevi'im for the non-Jewish nations as well. And so Parshas Balak introduces us to perhaps the most famous and infamous of these Nevi'im, Bilam. He's known as Bilam HaRasha. And he is not, to put it mildly, he is not a good person. Now, I'm not focusing on Bilam today, but he happens to be, it's called Parshas Balak, but Bilam plays a key role in Parshas Balak, and so it's very important, I think, to mention that. What was so special about Bilam, that he's compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, that there was no Nevi'im on the status of Moshe Rabbeinu, but Bilam is considered to be on a similar level to Moshe Rabbeinu in a number of ways. Perhaps, as Chazal teach us, the most important way that Bilam was like Moshe Rabbeinu was his ability to reach out to contact Hashem when he wanted to, as opposed to the spirit of Hashem just coming on to him. Now, Balak was, of course, the Melech of Moab. And it's a very... As we see, the first pasuk in the Parshas Balak says, "Vayar Balak ben Zippor es kol asher asa Yisrael lemor," that Balak ben Zippor saw everything that Yisrael had done to the Emori. And then the next pasuk Gimel says, "Vayagar Moav mipnei ha'am me'od ki ravhu ve'yaketz Moav mipnei bnei Yisrael," and the Moavim were extremely frightened. They're terrified of the bnei Yisrael for there were many, and the Moavim became very sickened, afraid, out of fear, the B'nai Yisrael. Now, there's a lot to read in between the lines here, because we, as of this point in the Parsha, it's not actually clear who Balak is. It's mentioned in shortly hereafter that he is the Melech. But so Chazal say that he wasn't the king initially, that all of the elders, all of the previous rulers of Moab and Midian, and for that matter, who were not known to be friends, they banded together against the B'nai Yisrael. So no one wanted to be in charge. No one wanted to be the king. Balak was a shtickel Navi himself. And so Chazal teach us that he foresaw the eventual downfall of the B'nai Yisrael, and he wanted to have his imprimatur on that so that he could end up to be the cause, even if only indirectly, of the downfall of B'nai Yisrael. And that gives us an indication of his character as well. So, again, focusing on the first two psukim, we'll look at the first Rashi on the Parsha. Again, this is... Eric Chaf Beis Pasuk Da'ad Beis, and also we'll do Pasuk Gimel. So the first Pasuk is Pasuk Beis. Again, as I mentioned, that the Pasuk says that Balak saw Vayar Balak. Balak saw everything that Bnei Israel had done to the Amorim. And Rashi says on this, Vayar Balak ben Sipor Es Kol Asher saw Israel the Amorim. Amar Elu Shnei Malachim Shahainu Betuchim Alehim Lo Amdu Bifneichim Anu Al Achas Kama Vekama Vesichach Vayagar Moyav. That Balak says that Rashi says that he said to his people that these two kings, which are referenced to Sichon and Og, if these two kings who were placed our trust could not stand up to the Bnei Yisrael, then certainly kama we can't. Therefore, Moav became terrified, which again is in the next pasuk. And this is Rashi, who's based on the Midrash Tanhuma. The Sifsei Chachamim comments that Rashi was troubled about why the pasuk states only that Balak saw everything that Bnei Yisrael had done to the Emiri. Surely there were others who had seen as well. Rashi therefore explains that it was Balak in particular who meditated upon the significance of what had happened, and therefore the Torah describes him as the one who truly saw what had happened. The Ger Aryeh says that Rashi is teaching us that Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel are connected. Once again, that Vayar Balak ben Sipor es Kol Asher Asa Yisrael Le'emoyri, Vayagar Moyav Mipnei Ha'am Me'oid Ki Ravu, Vayakitz Moyav Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. That not only Balak ben Sipor saw everything Bnei Yisrael did to the Emoyri, that the Moyavim became very frightened, they became very afraid for everything that Bnei Yisrael had done. For the Ger Aryeh says, if one does not interpret the psukim in this way, what is Pasuk Beis coming to teach us? In other words, Ger Aryeh is, by the way, is a parish on Rashi, and he's trying to understand why is Rashi saying what he says. It must be that Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel are connected. Otherwise, there's nothing really that Pasuk Beis is teaching us on our own. That Balak had seen everything the Bnei Yisrael did to the Amori. In his comments to Pasuk Beis, Rashi explains, as we mentioned previously, the connection between Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel. It's precisely because Balak saw everything the Bnei Yisrael had done to the Amori that Moav became terrified of Yisrael. Again, that is based on the Ger Aryeh. However, this fact appears to be obvious even without Rashi, as Ger Aryeh himself notes, if one doesn't interpret the Torah in this way, what is Pasuk Beis coming to teach us? Pasuk Beis does not appear to stand on its own. It merely records the Balak's observation without his subsequent conclusion or reaction. Therefore, the only reasonable explanation for the sequence of Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel would appear to be that Moav's terror in Pasuk Gimel was the result of Balak's observation in Pasuk Beis. What then is Rashi adding here that we could not have picked up on our own? According to Sifrei Chachamim, Pasuk Beis teaches us that Balak alone meditated on the significance of what happened. And he was thus alerted the people to the apparent danger of the land as that was coming up, as we see in Pasuk Gimel. However, it is difficult, in my opinion, to accept that the pshat, that the Bnei Yisrael's defeat of Sichon and Og was appreciated as a military threat only by Balak and not by his people. As I alluded to at the beginning, there is an opinion that Chazal bring down that why did Balak become Melech? Because no one else wanted it. They saw what happened, and he was, so to speak, the last man standing. So why would this require special meditation or deep thought? So an explanation is that Pasuk Gimel states the reason for the Moavim's fear of Bnei Yisrael. The Moav became terrified of Bnei Yisrael because they were numerous. Clearly, the large population of the Bnei Yisrael was also known to Moav well before the war against Sichon, especially as Bnei Yisrael had passed around the southern eastern sides of the lands of Moav, as we learn in Rashi from last week's Parsha, that's going to be Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Yud Gimel, that this happened before the war. So in Pasuk Gimel appears to be speaking of an occurrence that took place before Pasuk Beis. Pasuk Gimel describes the general fear that the Moavim had for Bnei Yisrael even before they defeated Sichon and Og. Whereas Pasuk Beis teaches Balak's fear that arose after Bnei Yisrael's victory. Vayar Balak. Balak saw everything that the Bnei Yisrael had did to the Amori. Now Rashi in Sefer Breishis comments that, as we know, that the Torah is not in chronological order, not always in chronological order. And so it's conceivable that Pasuk Gimel could predate Pasuk Beis. On the other hand, at this basic pshat level, it is preferable to presume that the Torah is usually at least in chronological order, unless there's a good reason to indicate otherwise. So in our case, Rashi understood that it would be more appropriate to accept that Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel are in fact in chronological order, and so explains that the Moavi terror in Pasuk Gimel was a result of the military victory that Balak saw in Pasuk Beis. But this begs a question. Why does Pasuk Beis stress that only Balak saw the victories of the Bnei Yisrael? Surely, this would have been public knowledge to all the people of Moab. To answer this question, Rashi writes, he says that if these two kings, Sichon and Og, in whom we placed our trust, could not stand up to the Bnei Yisrael, then certainly we can't. Here, Rashi is referring to a previous statement made in Parshas Chukas to explain why Sichon did not permit Bnei Yisrael to pass through his borders. You can find this in last week's Parsha, again, Perech Chof Aleph Pasuk Chof Gimel. Rashi writes that this is because the Canaanite kings paid him a levy, a tax, in order to protect them against invading armies. So when Bnei Yisrael said to him, "Let us pass through your land," he said to them, "My entire purpose is to protect them from you. So how can you say such a thing?" So he went out toward Yisrael. Now, if it had been public knowledge that the Canaanite kings paid Sichon a tax to protect their borders, when the Bnei Yisrael would never have made a futile request to let me pass through your land. Evidently, the non-Jewish Malachim kept Sichon's protection a secret among themselves. So when Balak saw Sichon and Og defeated by the Bnei Yisrael, he realized that the national security of Moab was threatened, since Sichon and Og were the two kings in whom we placed our trust. However, since the tax to Sichon and Og was not public knowledge, the Bnei Moab would not have been aware of the significance of what had happened. And since the Bnei Yisrael went around the entire land of Moab, it appeared that they were not planning to attack Moab at all. Consequently, the size of Bnei Yisrael and their victory over Sichon and Og were not likely to have been the cause of significant concern to the people of Moab. So Pasuk Beis stresses that Balak alone, that Vayar Balak ben Sippor es kol asher asa Yisrael emori, that it was Balak who saw everything that Yisrael had done to the Amorim. For he alone realized its implications for the security of Moab. Thus, when Rashi innovated that Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel have a cause and effect relationship, as we just stated, he was informing us that Moab's terror in Pasuk Gimel was caused by Balak's making his own personal knowledge and fears public. That is, that Sichon and Og had actually been paid to protect Moab. And then Moab became terrified of Bnei Yisrael because they were numerous. Beforehand, the size and military might of the Bnei Yisrael had not been perceived as a threat to the Moabim because they didn't see Bnei Yisrael as an enemy. But when Balak suggested to them that Yisrael was indeed an enemy and the only reason they had not attacked before was because of Sichon and Og's protection, Moab became terrified. You often try to think of a lesson that we can learn from something that we learn in it. And then I want to say that one of the lessons I think we can learn from this understanding of the first two psukim here in the parsha is a lesson that we really should take to heart. That we can't really put all of our faith and trust in others. Now, that doesn't mean we can't trust others to help us, but we can't put all of our faith in others. What did the Muwazin do? They put all of their faith in Sichon and Oig. And remember, these were giants. They were very powerful people. And yet, they were defeated by the Bnei Yisrael. Of course, that really means they were defeated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the fact that the kings of Moab had kept this arrangement a secret, they put all of their faith in one basket, so to speak. And that, we see time and again, is not really a good idea. Especially, again, we see over and over throughout our history that we, not just we as Bnei Yisrael, but as Jewish people, but we see examples all across the world where we try to put faith in others without necessarily doing our part as well, without at least sharing with our people, and I'm saying that globally again, the royal we, without sharing with others, our constituencies, what have you, of the potential consequences of what's really going on. Honesty is the best policy. We say this is perhaps a trite aphorism, but it's important to be straightforward. That doesn't mean that all of the secrets of your entire country or your business or what have you have to be public knowledge, but it does mean that you shouldn't end up to keep secrets from those who need to know them. And we also see that we shouldn't put faith completely in others. We, when we are in positions of power, positions of authority, we need to recognize who we can share our knowledge with. You'll notice that in my opinion at least, I think you'll notice that in the best run, whether it's governments or countries or companies rather, businesses, nonprofit organizations, shuls, that it's very seldom the most effective in the long term when there's only one person who's in charge. Because then he or she could make a mistake, could have an issue, because he or she actually is trusting someone else to help out, but the people don't know it. So then better run countries, organizations, what have you, will end up to have, whether it's a board of directors or a staff of people who work together with the figurehead to help best run the country, to help best run the company. And so the burden is then shared. It's not just one person who does everything and then maybe by him or herself thrust the faith in someone or something else. But there's a shared burden, so to speak, among a group of leaders, people in leadership positions, so that you don't have putting your faith completely in one person or in someone else. But there's a shared, I say shared burden of leadership, but it's not all in one, wrapped around one person or one to make all the decisions for everyone all the time. And then he or she could put faith in someone else. When you put faith all in one place and you don't share with at least a few other people, the other people who can help make decisions, then your entire premise for being a good leader appears to be lost, especially when we're looking outside of Torah Hashem. And again, this is how we should always try to rule ourselves, is to of course, follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will. So that means we're submitting ourselves completely to Hashem. But in our day-to-day lives, the Melech Basar V'dam, a company, whatever it may be, it shouldn't just be that there's one person at the top making all decisions and no one else knows what's going on. I think it's an important lesson. It's a very roundabout way to say it, perhaps. But I think it's an important lesson we should all learn, to not put all of your eggs in one basket and to not put all of your faith in others. Anyway, I wish everyone that they should see this lesson and really see it to fruition in the ways and places in their lives that they're able to. And by doing so, they'll help to others to influence them in a positive way. And then, Mr. Shem, this should help to usher in our Geula Shleima, where we will be listening really just to the one who we should be listening to all the time, which is the Kadosh Baruch Hu, through his emissary, Mashiach Zekeinu, v'Mehera B'Yameinu. I wish everyone a good Shabbos.